It's time to listen to the interviews from Island Life on Saturday, the 3rd of October, 2015. Island Life is Waiheke Radio's weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, and the show is brought to you with the support of the Humble Pie Village Butchery. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirawa. I'm Chris Walker, and on Saturday, the 3rd of October, I spoke to the spokesperson for the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance, Joe Holmes, and I talked to the opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. My next guest is in the studio, Joe Holmes, who will be familiar to many of you because she was a former deputy chair of the local board, and since that time has gone on to, and continued to be involved and interested, in, particularly in local body politics, and is this currently the spokesperson for the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance. And Joe's here to talk us about the alliance and what they hope to achieve. So, good morning, Joe. How are you?
I'm well, Chris. How are yourself?
Very well, thank you.
Good.
So the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance, maybe just tell us a little bit about, you know, what's the organisation about?
The organisation really is about its membership. This is a group of people who came together and were very unhappy about the culture of waste that they saw in Auckland Council. So the membership was grown from nothing in April, which is when we started, to 13,000 members now.
So the membership, I mean, let's go back to that kind of, I suppose, the genesis of it. So it's a kind of come out of the Taxpayers Union.
Yeah.
And I suppose the Taxpayers Union is an organisation that people, many people have kind of learnt a bit more through the Dirty Politics book. And how that group was formed. So, I mean, you've got your 13,000 members, but the inner circle of it, if you like, I mean, who's involved in that? Who's behind that and started it up?
The Taxpayers Union is our sister organisation, and I joined the Taxpayers Union as a member around about a year ago, just in fact that around the time of the elections. The Taxpayers Union stands up for taxpayers. They felt that there was absolutely nobody representing the interests of taxpayers. This resonated with me. There's a culture of waste in government, just as there is in council. And so when they set up and they were putting reports out that said, you know, this is how government is wasting money, that resonated with me. So they were aware of my blog, and they got in touch with me and said, look, what we're getting at the Taxpayers Union is a lot of people concerned about what's going on at Auckland Council, far more probably queries than almost any other issue. We think it's time that there was a ratepayers union to represent the interests of ratepayers. Again, that resonated with me and a lot of ratepayers in Auckland. So they approached me because they were aware of my blog, joeholmes.com, which I blog about Waiheke issues, council issues, and really any issue that takes my fancy. And we got together and said, yep, I think that we could form a ratepayers alliance, and put that out there in April, and the response was overwhelming, absolutely overwhelming. Even we hadn't anticipated just how much frustration there is out there in Auckland with the waste of ratepayers' money. So basically, the alliance is to have a voice for ratepayers.
So, yeah, but let's come back to the who is this we? There's yourself, obviously,
yep.
And who are the other people who are really the driving force?
Our executive it consists of Jordan Williams and a lovely lady called Carmel Claridge. She was so concerned at the waste of money in Auckland that she started an organisation called Ratebusters. And she got in touch with, as soon as we started with the Ratepayers Alliance, she got in touch with us. And together we form a team that is out there really reporting on all those things that really upset ratepayers most.
Yeah, and I'd like to talk about some of those in a moment.
Sure.
So you've had, as you say, I mean, a significant number of people have joined up. Does that represent active involvement, or is that like a Facebook like?
No. They are members. They are people who've actively said they want to be members of this organisation, and 700 of them are wanting to be volunteers and have already been active out there as volunteers, promoting the Ratepayers Alliance and drawing people's attention to some of the waste that goes on.
Yeah. So You've been focusing, as you say, on waste. I mean, what are some of the issues with Auckland Council that most frustrate you?
I think when you see rate rises that were promised of 2.5% by the mayor, Len Brown, and then you're faced with rates rises of 9.9%, that's outrageous. And a lot of people, especially in the poorer parts of Auckland, were hit very hard indeed by that rates rise. I think down in the south part of Auckland, they were facing 17% average rates rise. Now, a lot of those people can't really afford that. That's money that they need for food on the table, to provide perhaps a few extras for the family. And instead, what they see every day virtually in the papers, is a culture of waste throughout the organisation. So I'll give you a couple of examples. You've got Len Brown, who has built a brand new private apartment suite for himself in his own offices, where he's got his own private gym, and no access, of course, to the public to be able to see that. That is a secret room that he's put in his new offices, in a new council building that was quite unnecessary. $150 million of ratepayers' money went into buying new council offices when they've got a perfectly good office block close to the town hall. Having done all of that and spent that amount of money, they then decided that they wanted to spend another $10 million, having moved the whole council there, another $10 million on a room so that they can have committee meetings, when just 400 yards away there's a perfectly adequate town hall committee meeting room. So these kind of things really upset people. Of course they are. They're going to upset people when they themselves are struggling to pay their own bills. It's not right. It shouldn't be happening. And we stand for the ratepayer and going to bring those things to everybody's attention.
So, I mean, you have focused to date predominantly on, you know, exposing or talking about things that you would see as wastage. What does the Alliance propose as a different way of operating?
We stand for fiscal responsibility, living within your means, if you like. The ratepayers should be expecting at least lower. Personally, I think they should be having lower rates, but at least to hold the mayor to account for his promise of 2.5% rate rises. People understand that the infrastructure of Auckland needs a lot of attention. Even 2.5% is way, way, way above the rate of inflation. So they can tolerate that. What they can't tolerate are broken promises. What they can't tolerate are extravagance. So we stand for fiscal responsibility, prudence, balanced budgets, and lower rates.
Even within your 13,000 members, there must be a diversity of views around what people see as essential. You know, we've got, you know, if we look, say, at even the current councillors, you know, there's a range of views there about whether things like, you know, the zoo is something that the council should be providing. Whereas I'm sure many of your members will go, you know, the zoo's a good thing. We get different points of view on libraries, and probably actually transport infrastructure is one of the areas where there's the greatest diversity of views. So even people who are concerned about wastage would accept some spending on that, whereas others are saying, no, we shouldn't be spending money on new transport infrastructure. How do you, I suppose, first of all, how do you gauge what that diversity of views is, and how do you then represent that through the Alliance?
Oh, it's not really about gauging a diversity of views. We're very clear about what the Alliance stands for: value for money for ratepayers. And that resonates with 13,500 ratepayers. Numbers are increasing all the time. So that's where we stand. We're not a political organisation. We're an organisation that stands for financial and fiscal responsibility.
Yes, but what I'm trying to get to is that there's fiscal responsibility, but how you assess fiscal responsibility will depend greatly on what you believe needs to happen in the city.
Nevertheless, there are budgets. There is only a certain amount of money. There's only a certain amount of money being collected in rates. For example, right now, the council is escalating debt out of all proportion. I wonder how many people are aware that for every household in Auckland, they now owe $20,000 worth of debt. Debt servicing costs alone, and people with mortgages will understand this, debt servicing costs alone are nearly $500 million. So between $500 million to service the debt, between a salary bill of around $1 billion, there's actually no money, more money from the rate take to do anything.
Yeah.
And that's a huge concern. It's a huge concern to anybody, no matter how you think the rates might be spent. That would be a concern to anybody.
So probably the biggest area of council budget, you know, is Auckland Transport and all its responsibilities. And probably the biggest budget item is the proposals around the rail link. Where does the Alliance have a position on those projects?
No, it doesn't. Its total position is around spending money wisely. They could afford to do an awful lot more in Auckland Council and not cut services, which is what they have done. They've actually cut services, which is just crazy. Basic infrastructure is actually being cut so that just a few projects can go ahead. Now, it's around, fiscal responsibility. It might be very possible, it might even be desirable to have a City Rail link. That's for councillors to decide. Our position is you afford it when you can afford it. You do what you can within the budgets that you have. That's where we stand.
So I suppose the process of arriving at the budget comes through... And a lot of people complain about, I suppose, the amount of consultation that councils do, that they're constantly coming and saying, have input to this report and that report, and it becomes damn confusing about which report you've been consulted on. I mean, you're familiar with this from your days on the board. So where does the Alliance sit on that balance between, on one hand, we've got people through those processes, both through the electoral and then the consultative processes, saying this is where we think the city should go, and on the other hand, that balance, you know, and the need to exercise fiscal restraint?
Again, that's the responsibility of councillors. And it's the responsibility of councillors to inform the public about what they're doing and why. What the public doesn't understand is when they see waste of money. That's what they don't understand. So when they see, you know, money going on public art, they don't mind public art, but they do mind chandeliers at $1 million a time. They do mind people spending money on cars for themselves, new cars. Auckland Transport has just completely upgraded its fleet. Why? When they've got perfectly adequate resources now. So it's not about deciding what Auckland Council and Auckland councillors should and shouldn't be doing. That's the democratic process. That's for the democratically elected people to decide. Nevertheless, ratepayers expect that their money is being spent wisely. Mm. And our job is to represent the ratepayers who think that the money is perhaps not being spent wisely.
Yeah, and I suppose that's the hard part to get at, isn't it? Is what do people accept as wise spending?
So that's for them to accept, and that's the democratic process. We have in a year's time some more elections. If people are fed up with Len Brown promising one thing and doing another, and similarly with councillors who go along with that, then they must say so at the election.
Well, I suppose that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, you know, a lot of your releases have focused on Len Brown.
Yes.
You know, I mean, he is the mayor. But, I mean, he's also one vote, isn't he? I mean, it's not an executive decision-making role.
That's quite right.
So we've got a number of councillors there. I mean, this budget was passed by a majority of councillors.
Yes, 10 to 9. And those are, a bit, you know, we've called them the Terrible 10, those councillors. Those councillors who've gone along with outrageous budget rises, rates rises, that really are disadvantaging the poor people of Auckland. And we call them the Terrible 10. We will hold them as an organisation to account. We've promised our members that we will be leafleting all of those places where those members are standing again, reminding the ratepayers of what those councillors have done.
So what's the nature of the organisation? I mean, as a member, is this an incorporated society? Is this an organisation where members will elect leadership, have a say in developing direction and policy? How does that all work?
We're 6 months old. We are just, I understand, getting an incorporation. And we didn't know at first where this was going. So it's taken us on a bit of a journey as well, and our organisation is just coming to grips with that. However, we are well organised on the ground, and I'm very confident that even though we run on donations, there's no membership fee as such, our donations have been such that we've already been able to afford a leafleting campaign. We've leafleted 20,000 households in Auckland, and our volunteers have been part of that. Just to remind people about the broken promises and about who voted for what.
So, is the legislation fit for purpose? We've got a structure which is set up, you know, I mean, Auckland Transport, which is a huge money drain. And, I mean, you've just pointed out a couple of examples of where you believe there's wastage in Auckland Transport. Is the legislation going to deliver what Auckland needs fiscally?
I think, again, that's a very good question, but it's a matter for government. That's very much, government has put this legislation in place, whether it's adequate or not. I would doubt that it is exactly properly attuned to what Auckland needs. But that's a government issue now, to revamp that legislation.
But is that, I mean, you know, it's kind of akin to criticising a boxer for not punching hard enough when they've got one arm tied behind their back.
No. We are criticising. There's no need for 10% per annum rate rises. Absolutely no need at all. They could save 300, 400, 500 million very quickly by looking at their budgets and living within their means. So that's what we're about, is actually pointing that out. The rest is big stuff. That's big stuff for governments to talk about. Big stuff for councils.
But isn't it important to get the big stuff right?
It probably is.
Set the parameters for...
It probably is, but that does not excuse a mayor who promises one thing. He got elected on a promise of 2.5% rates rises and then delivers 9.9%. Now, that is completely outrageous. And the people of Auckland think that's outrageous, and they want a voice that actually represents them to say that. That's what we do. You're right, there are other bigger issues. And certainly council, the legislation is probably inadequate for a city the size of Auckland and for the sort of structure they've put in place. Nevertheless, that doesn't mean to say that a council cannot live within its means.
Does the Alliance have sympathy for the groups of residents who are proposing pulling away from Auckland Council? I mean, a lot of their arguments there are around the idea that they could do it better.
We don't have an opinion either way. We just, that's not what we're about. That's for individual groups, if you like, to protest around or make whatever play they want to make. But we're focused on what we have, and what we have is Auckland Council, and that is what's before us, and that's where we focus our efforts.
So what happens now for the Alliance as we head into the electoral cycle? I mean, you're not shy of criticising councillors and the mayor as the Alliance. What will your activity be in the lead up to the local body elections?
Because we stand for fiscal responsibility, for living within our means, the first thing that we'll be doing for any candidate that stands, we will be asking them to sign a pledge. That pledge says that they will live within their means, that they will live within the budgets that they have, and that they will keep to the promises that they make. That's the first thing. We will also have a campaign of leafleting all of those areas where the councillors who's voted for 9.9% rate rises, and I have to say that is not just this year. We have to understand that this is in the budget, 10% rate rises ad infinitum. So it's not just this year's issue, it's ongoing issues. And we will leaflet the areas where those councillors are standing again to remind people of what they are voting for, if you like, who they are voting for. And again, remind people to join the Ratepayers Alliance at ratepayers.nz, because we need the membership out there. We need donations to do the very important things that we want to do. A further thing that we want to do in the coming election is have a debt clock. This shows, second by second, how much debt Auckland Council is racking up, because today's debt equals tomorrow's higher rates. So we want to make people aware of that in a very graphic way.
So how will the Alliance engage in the discussion about, I suppose, reshaping the parameters, reshaping the ambitions of Aucklanders to something which aligns with what you believe is an appropriate budget?
For now, we leave that to the politicians. It is a political matter of how they wish to spend the money that they collect in rates. Nevertheless, it's still very irresponsible when they spend that money on things that absolutely can be seen by anybody. It doesn't matter who you are, can see that that's a waste of money. We're not a political organisation. We're not standing for this candidate versus that candidate. What we're saying is these people have broken promises. You need to be reminded of that. If you vote for them again, you must understand what it is you're voting for. We stand for fiscal responsibility. That's out there. We've asked the candidates to make a pledge. If they don't make that pledge, you can draw your own conclusions. It stands there.
So how do we, I mean, you're very involved in social and political comment yourself.
Yes.
And how do you draw the distinction between, you know, so you've got an organisation, which you say is not political. I mean, yourself and your social media pundit role are very political.
Yes.
How do you draw that separation?
Just like today, you are not talking to me about joeholmes.com, my daily blog, which goes into many, many issues, because I'm here as the spokesperson for the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance. You rightly recognise that the two things are separate. I recognise that the two things are separate.
But how,
let me answer the question. When I speak for the Alliance, I speak for them as a whole, as the policy that is put out by the Alliance. It might be occasionally that I don't agree with it, and that I might put in my blog. But while I'm speaking for the Alliance, I speak for the reports and the policies they put out.
I suppose that's where we come back to, how does that policy get formed? I mean, is that...
Policy is the wrong word, isn't it? It's really, at the moment, focusing on sending out media releases, alerting people to the culture of waste in Auckland Council.
Yeah.
So that's really all we've done for the last 6 months.
Mm. And I suppose what I'm getting at here is this merely a case of you interviewing your own typewriter? You know, like in your blog, you will quote the Auckland Ratepayers Alliance, in effect quoting yourself as a source. And, you know, and as I said, we talked before about the Dirty Politics book and the Taxpayers Union.
We didn't talk about it. Fair enough.
I mentioned it. But it's a recognised means of engagement that people will create an organisation, because an organisation perhaps is given greater credibility in media and so on than an individual. So how do you separate out the political views of the small group who are driving the Alliance from the people who, how do you establish that separation?
Obviously, I use my personal blog to promote the various things that the Alliance is doing. That makes sense, because obviously I'm very much in tune with their aims and objectives. Then, again, on my personal blog, I do an awful lot of stuff about local issues, Waiheke issues, which is not the concerns of the Ratepayers Alliance per se. They're just not. So I think I've done a very good job of separating out the two things. I try and keep very hard to keep them separate. And I'm very comfortable with running both for personal opinion. Because after all, we've all got personal opinions. Then we join organisations because we like the wider goals of that organisation. I don't see any real conflict between the two.
Mm. At the moment, you've said that the Alliance won't put up candidates in the local body election. That still stands? You see that standing throughout the election period?
One of the things that's attractive to our membership is the fact that we are not a political organisation. We are not Labour, we are not National. We stand for very, very set values, and those values are fiscal responsibility, as I keep on saying. But we do not want to stand candidates because we're, if you like, a pressure group. Because candidates are there, there's a democratic election, that's how it should be. Hopefully we're going to change the mayor, because I think the continuation with Len Brown would just be disastrous for Auckland.
Do you see
that's a personal opinion.
Yep.
I also suspect it's the opinion of the Alliance. We're simply critical. We don't say that he's got to go, but I'm sure that's absolutely implicit.
How would you gauge that?
Gauge what?
What the opinion of the Alliance is.
But by our membership.
Yes. How would you go about? I mean, is that something you're doing? Are you going to them and saying, what do you think about this position?
We engage with our membership all the time. They're perfectly free to email us all the time, as they do, and we respond to that. We have Facebook pages, we have web pages, and people are free to come and go within that membership. As it is, virtually nobody has decided that they don't like what we're doing. The membership continues to grow. I mean, to put it in some kind of perspective for you, we're very close to 15,000 members. That would be more than the entire Labour Party of New Zealand. So this is a big organisation that people can resonate with, that stands for their values.
Mm.
And I think there is, I mean, you must feel yourself, there's a huge frustration amongst ratepayers that they're not listened to, either by their elected representatives or by bureaucrats. The same goes for governments. There is a huge frustration that taxpayers are not represented. And I agree with that. I get very frustrated as a taxpayer that although we have democratic elections, that is not a carte blanche for people to go wasting my hard-earned money.
So other people, you've talked about Len Brown a couple of times, and obviously very concerned about his leadership and his positions. People are showing their hands now as mayoral candidates. Are there others who you think would do a better job?
That's for people to come forward at the moment. There are very few people who have come forward. I think I know of only two people who have come forward as mayoral candidates apart from, not apart from anybody. I only know two people who have put their hands up, and that's Stephen Berry and Mark Thomas. Neither of them are particularly well known to Aucklanders, but I don't think, although there's a lot of talk about Phil Goff, it's not actually put his hand up yet. Len Brown might well stand again for a third term. I hear on the grapevine that that's very much in his mind to do. So it'll be a very interesting election coming up.
And, how vociferously would you see the Alliance kind of supporting or not supporting various candidates?
We know what we stand for. That's what the pledge is for. This is what our members want to see. They want to see Auckland living within its means. Here's a pledge that you as a candidate can say yes or no to, and people can draw their own conclusions. It's not for us to tell people how to think.
But you will highlight where people voted for the budget.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, because there's something that is completely outrageous for people. In fact, it's the thing, as soon as the 9.9% rate rise was announced, our membership went through the roof.
Do you believe that the, coming back to the setup of the Auckland Council, and, those former councils had to bring their debt in. There were some legislative structures around how they dealt with the debt and their rating systems. There wasn't an open rein there for them to set up the rating structures. A lot of that was prescribed. Do you think that needs to be re-looked at?
Very possibly. Very possibly. I don't think the structure for Auckland Council is in any way ideal. I think the mayor has far too many powers. But these are personal opinions. These are not necessarily the opinions of the Alliance, and that's what I'm here for today.
Yeah. And what you said, live within your means, what does that mean? Does that mean zero rates increase, inflation-linked, 2.5, 5, what's appropriate?
Interesting. I would say that you need to have inflation linked. This is a personal opinion. This is not the opinion of the Alliance that I'm saying now. But it's just like running a business to me. Auckland Council, the government, anybody, all of these people, you know, they extract almost by force, in fact it is by force, our money that we've earned, and they have a responsibility then, if you like, there's a social contract for them to spend that money wisely. Now, what wisely is, may, as you rightly pointed out, can vary between people. But, you know, as a business, you have a budget. You live within those means. If you need to do things for infrastructure, to build a business, you borrow money, of course. But even there, you can be very careful that you can, within your means, you can afford the debt repayments. We have a situation in Auckland right now where the debt is out of control, and it's going to impact, I don't think people even realize how much it's going to impact on them now and in the future in a very detrimental way.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for coming in this morning, Joe. If people want to find out more, what's the website?
The website is ratepayers.nz, and if they want to find out more about my personal opinions, they can go to joeholmes.com.
All right, thanks very much.
Thanks, Chris.
You're listening to Waiheke Radio, 88.3 and 107.4 FM.
As it's the first Saturday of the month, I'm joined in the studio by our opinionated Islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm very well. So you're in a bit early. No problems getting out of bed, getting down here this time?
No, of course not.
No, absolutely not. Good, yeah.
No, good to be up early.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. So you've been out with the dog, Alex?
Yeah, walking dogs all the time, yeah.
You're both dog owners.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, what was your take on all this kind of restructuring of the dog bylaws and all the rest of it?
Well, it looked like one of those things where two different points of pressure were meeting. You can see the point of view of the conservationists who want to look out for things like blue penguins. I'm going to put my hand up to this and say, if I took my dog anywhere near a blue penguin, the it would be dog one, blue penguin nil. He's a little wretch, and he would chase one, so I keep him away from things like that.
You keep him away, yeah. For me, that's just kind of common sense. You know, when springtime, you see all the ducklings. Have you seen all the ducklings appearing? I saw a clutch of 10 crossing Bay Road the other day.
Yep, there certainly are a lot.
Yeah, and you know, I just don't take my dogs anywhere near walks where I know they're ducklings. It's just what you do. So for me, it's a thing of just being kind of reasonable from both sides of the situation. I found it quite odd. You know, I love dogs, but the idea of wanting to walk your dogs off leash in a nature reserve, I thought that was asking a little much.
Mm-hmm. There did seem to be a certain amount of complaint coming from the people that you'd normally expect to be criticizing the community board. They're trying to make it out like, to hear some people going on, and you know, no names, but I'm sure we all know who we're talking about here. They were making it sound as if Paul Walden was personally organizing a roundup and cull of all dogs. So, you know, once again, that particular source of troublemaking, just complete overreaction and lack of credibility once more.
Yeah, I think Waiheke's still got plenty of opportunities for off-leash. Our dogs can trot along Palm Beach, and that's fine, you know. But to let them go off-leash in Whakanaefa seems completely ridiculous. You know? And if I think a perfectly reasonable compromise would be to say, let them go on leash in Whakanaefa. One issue that I found quite perplexing was that people that run through Whakanaefa, you know, do trail running, they were saying it's very dangerous to run with your dog on a leash. But that's a choice someone makes, you know. I think you should be able to figure it out. You know, let your dog run ahead on you on those extendable leashes or whatever. It's not that dangerous, you know. I thought it was a bit of a strange argument.
Well, you get a bunch of them in there, you'd risk ending up like a maypole, though.
Exactly, yes.
Yeah, but it's easy enough to sort out, you know. Yeah.
But, I mean, nobody had a problem some years ago when dogs were excluded from all the dotterel nesting areas.
Yeah, it's just
reasonable. Just makes perfect sense. I mean, all right, dotterels don't really – they're one of those annoying species where you you think, you guys really aren't trying. You build your nests at the high water mark on open beaches. It's not a very good idea.
Well, sometimes below the high water mark.
Below the high water mark, yes.
So the king tides will often overwhelm a dotterel nest. Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe dotterels should be born with a, you know that little Plunket pack that comes with babies. The dotterels should have a little tide tables in it, you know. So
yes. I mean, it's like kakapo. You look at them and you sometimes think, what's your guy's problem? You know, this lengthy mating ritual, the specialised diet. I mean, come on, it's just sex. Drunk teenagers manage it. What's your problem? Specialised diet be damned. Would it hurt to grab a burger now and again?
Yeah, they specialised. Maybe they got specialised sex requirements, you know.
They clearly do.
Yeah,
but yes, I mean, with dotterels and stuff like that, yeah, okay, they're a really sort of, they're one of those very perilous species that seem to just love breeding and raising their young in really unsuitable places. And is it really that big a deal just to ask to keep dogs away from them?
No, I don't think so. I think
there's plenty of nice places you can take dogs.
Yeah. Well, I found the negotiating position of the dog lobby that remember they were at the local board meeting a week ago, and their negotiating position I thought was a strange place to start. They acknowledged that they had been breaking the law all these years but wanted to continue breaking the law.
Yeah.
It was a strange place to start.
Well, it seemed like a lot of people didn't realise.
Yes, there was also that as well,
yeah.
A lot of people didn't know that this was the law.
Yeah.
It was written into the constitution of the subdivision.
It made me notice the other day, actually, when I was taking my dog for a walk, that one of the tracks I went down actually still has got one of the old Auckland City Council signs there.
Yeah.
So there's no updating of the stuff.
Yeah. But I know the Park Point subdivision or Tiatia subdivisions, it was actually written in. That was the deal. If there were going to be walkways, dogs would be on leads. It was just the first
I think
rule.
So long as Totoki Reserve is left as it is, then we're fine. I mean, that is one of the greatest dog walking places I've ever come across.
Or rabbit chasing as well.
And rabbit chasing, yes. Yes, particularly if, like me, you have a terrier.
Yeah, and there's the thing, you know, if a dog chases a blue penguin, that's a bad thing. If a dog chases a rabbit...
Well, exactly. I mean, my dog, I have a terrier, and he's a good ratter. And when I take him to work and he comes in with a rat that he's managed to track down and kill, you give him a pat on the head and a biscuit and say, well done.
Yeah.
So it's very... And plus, if he got a rabbit, you know, it would be the same thing. These are creatures that need to be kept under control. That's one of the reasons you have terriers. But when he comes in with something like a blue penguin and goes, hey, how did I get on? No, that one was bad. You weren't supposed to do that.
You need an identification chart. Speaking of rats, it's quite interesting to see the Hauraki Gulf Conservation Trust's grand vision of predator-free Waiheke in by 2030.
Fantastic idea.
Yeah. I don't think they'll actually achieve total predator-free, but I think what is possible is eradication of mustelids and then total and control of rats down to less than 5% is what they...
But, I mean, as I'm sure we've observed before, 20 years ago when I first came here, you would rarely see a pheasant.
Yeah.
If you took a drive out past Onitangi, you might occasionally see a pheasant.
Yeah.
Oh, wow, look at that, there's a pheasant. Now they're everywhere.
Yeah.
And that is because in nature there are only ever consequences. You get rid of the predators and suddenly the other species all start to thrive.
Yeah, I've noticed that there's... those imported doves, I think they're called Barbary doves, the little
grey
doves.
They've got everywhere.
Yeah, they've taken off big time. So that could be an indication of rats. The rats that climb trees have obviously...
Mind you, speaking of predators, I don't often read the local press. It's rather... It's just annoying.
Come on.
I don't.
That's a prize-winning publication. Well, one is...
There was an outstandingly foolish letter a couple of weeks ago from somebody saying, oh, why must we always speak in terms of eradicating pests? Surely we can learn to live with them.
The Indian minor birds.
Yeah. Oh, please. Are you really that insanely stupid?
Yeah, there was a good response from Lincoln Jackson, who is the honorary ranger. I think he gets paid now a little bit. He's the ranger for Forest and Bird, looks after their two reserves, and he responded quite well to that.
Oh, did he?
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Because I read it and just thought, can you really be that insane? You've obviously never had a rat infestation, or you wouldn't be going on like this.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's interesting at the moment, because what you've got is some groups, and I mean, you've been kind of involved with this, Alex, with the campaign to set up a marine reserve, and what you've got is some tensions, I think, arising on land between people who have aspirations for further conservation efforts. You know, one of the drivers behind the dog bylaw changes was people's proposals that in the future we might have kiwi.
That's right, yeah.
And you know, and
it'd be lovely,
so you've got these tensions there of people, well, where do we go? And that balance of how do we go about living our normal lifestyle?
Yeah.
How much do we focus our island on the needs of the people living here now, as opposed to, say, maybe tourism attraction or input and conservation aspirations?
I'm always wary of that word balance, because it's used so well by the national government. But when you're talking conservation in New Zealand, the native wildlife, native animals in New Zealand have had such a bad, they've been disadvantaged to such an extent. I think they maybe need a few breaks now. Maybe the balance should be tilted slightly in their favour for once, because for the past few hundred years, it's been so severely against them.
Mm.
So the idea of returning kiwis is great, but we would have to have pockets on the island that would be completely dog-free. And you could start with, say, with Awaroa Eco Village. That is a dog-free zone. So if you had Awaroa Eco Village ringed by bait traps and so on, you could get kiwis back there. Yeah.
Although it does seem, doesn't it? I mean, apart from offshore islands, the only other places where kiwis are really successfully being reintroduced is inshore islands, where they completely fence.
Oh, no, Coromandel has got quite a good population of kiwi. And
does
there's
it?
Yeah. And,
wow.
Yeah, and there's quite a healthy population of kiwi just inland from Kerikeri in the hills. Because you remember there was a story of an Alsatian dog that took out 30 over a short period. And so there is a population up there. So they can exist. Kiwi, when they get to a certain weight and size, they can fend off most predators, except for big dogs. Yeah.
Because that's one thing I noticed with Coromandel. Going over there, I did the that little railway track thing up.
Oh, yeah,
The pottery.
I think that's about where the kiwi are, somewhere up there.
Well, what struck me about the forest up there was how silent it was.
It is,
And you live on Waiheke and you just get used to the sound of tui. To go over to Coromandel, where they've just been eradicated by possums, it's pretty sad to hear how silent the forest is.
Yeah, well, that's the big thing. But the soundtrack of the island is It's almost one of those intangibles, you know. They, if you looked at that tourism survey, they had one of these graphics where they have words at different sizes to show what the attraction of Waiheke was, and the attraction was scenery, beaches. They were the two biggest, scenery and beaches, and then it went down. But imagine if soundtrack was one of those big attractions.
Yeah.
So, speaking of which, we're going to have an interesting soundtrack with. Like you were saying earlier, just before we came on air, that it's going to be a busy summer for visitors, you reckon?
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's started even earlier than usual.
One thing I'd like them to take out of the soundtrack is, it must have been written into Lonely Planet somewhere. There seems to be a deal as you rent the yellow scooter and you go driving past the locals and you toot at them with the yellow scooter hooter. Have you noticed that?
Yes.
Yeah, so they must be responding to some injunction.
Those scooters, yes, they're quite.
Apparently,
we should get rid of, though, the thing. If you have a rental car, you have to absolutely stop dead in the road.
Where?
At random points.
Random points, yeah. Apparently, Waiheke, in the latest edition of Lonely Planet, we have our own unique listing. Yeah,
I should think so too.
So, but the thing is, that's going to change the soundtrack of the summer.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think that locals are more prone to. How many times have you come across locals who have stopped going either direction, both leaning out the window?
Having a chat.
Oh, there is that. Yeah, but we're locals. Yeah, we're entitled to do that.
That's our right.
Yes.
But if on the door of your car it says Waiheke rental cars, then no, not allowed.
Yeah.
But there's certain rights. You know, like if you own a BMW 4x4, you are entitled, and I think it's even written into the owner's manual, that disabled parking in the turning circle at the ferry, that's yours.
That's yours, yes.
Absolutely. Mm. So there's certain rights, you know. Yeah, all good stuff. But if we're going to have a busy summer, is water going to be an issue? Because it's also going to be a dry summer.
They're saying it's the worst El Nino pattern for 17 years or something.
So what does a brewer do? Does he...
We have a water bore.
Yeah, and is that good quality water?
Yes, well, it is once we've filtered it.
Oh, okay.
We have a filter system like you wouldn't believe.
Really?
Oh, it's magnificent. Yeah.
So water out of the ground is not that good?
Not really, because it's full of manganese.
Oh, so you could have a manganese beer?
Yes. Well, no, or rather, no.
Put your teeth on edge, or what?
Yeah, it's the groundwater's fine. You just have to tidy it up, and you need one of these great big water filters that backwashes itself in the early hours of the morning and clears all the rubbish out.
And if you made your beer from rainwater, what would the story be?
Well, that's lovely. That's one of the things that's been really interesting with making beer here is that I've actually developed most of the styles of beer I do are soft water styles. So
that's rainwater.
We'll work with rainwater. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that could be one of the special...
The only problem with it is that it's a bit neutral in terms of pH. Yeah. So you generally, when making beer with it, you have to slightly acidify it to make it work.
Well, I'm sort of my marketing head's churning away here. We could talk about Alan's... Alan's rainwater beer, that's the unique selling proposition.
It does say something
it does.
Somewhere, doesn't it? About made with Waiheke rainwater or something. Yeah.
But Alan, one thing is, just going back, I think the last two occasions we were on air, Chris and I were looking at each other and missing you because there was a crisis at the brewery.
Oh, we've just been...
Please explain.
It's just got very, very busy. Visitors coming through, all kinds of stuff going on. I'm sorry about the no-show the last couple of months.
No, I just thought there'd be an interesting story behind it.
No, just things getting busy. It's great. As I tell lots of people, there has never been a better time to be a beer drinker. We're living in a golden age of beer. There's a
lot
of golden age stuff.
Well, Chris and I both sagely decided that a crisis at the brewery was probably up there amongst the most sort of national.
They should have a siren.
National importance.
Oh, yeah.
Something that everything has to stop for. Yeah. Gee.
Yes, and Waiheke hit the news again this week, unfortunately.
Yes.
Yeah.
Presumably nobody local, or they'd have noticed they were missing. But that is rather disturbing.
We're talking about the
body
deceased person found on a walkway. Yeah, shame. Yeah, I suppose
presumably have been a visitor.
Yeah,
but some strange reporting in the Herald. Who, as they tend to do these
do
days,
tell.
goes straight to Facebook.
Yeah.
And go, this is what people are saying online.
Yeah,
which is mostly uninformed gossip,
and
speculation, and kind of write the story from that basis. Very, very odd.
Yeah.
Yes, relying on what's being said online, not a very reliable thing.
No. Yes, I always kind of cringe when you see the stories that have been reported in mainstream media now, where they say, and on Twitter, someone,
yes. And who exactly are these people on Twitter?
There have been some interesting media issues on the wider front. Did you see the one about Mike Hosking being complaints upheld about Mike Hosking?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
No, I didn't see that.
Yeah, his comments about Amanda Bailey, the waitress who had her hair pulled, his comments were deemed to be unacceptable, basically.
I think, basically Mike Hoskins should be deemed to be unacceptable.
the totality of it, yeah.
Yeah, Mike Hoskins seems to me to be a very good example of why we should always try and ignore Mike Hoskins.
Yeah, yeah.
He's a dreadful little man.
Yeah,
He's just becoming worse and worse.
Yeah. Well, I've often thought about this. There seems to be a strange split, almost like a dual personality to the medium of radio. Here we are on radio. But commercial radio seems to bring out the worst of journalism, like Hosking, and public radio, like national radio, Radio New Zealand, seems to bring out the very best. So,
well, there's a fundamental difference between public, non-commercial radio and commercial radio. Because in commercial radio, the audience is the advertiser, the listener is the product that the station is selling to the advertiser. That's flipped on its head.
Yeah.
Whereas with non-commercial radio, it's about the listener.
That's right, yeah. I'm with you there, yeah. And it's always a dangerous thing to use the word should, but I would say that's how it should be, shouldn't it?
Ideally. I've always been very sad that radio doesn't fit my listening pattern. It's just something that is too distracting at work for me to listen to, which is I've always found very sad.
Yeah, well, it's funny. The one downside of good quality radio is you have to stop and concentrate.
Yeah.
You can't have it on at the background. But I do, that said, I do enjoy going to the hardware store. Because they have some, there must be, I think it's a worldwide phenomenon. Hardware stores always have the sort of easy listening classic hits of a generation ago type. And like right now, if I'm feeling in the need for a bit of Doobie Brothers or maybe Shania Twain, I go to the hardware store, I'll get it.
Oh, true. Placemakers, yes. Yeah, there's a classic rock station.
It's lovely.
It is interesting, though, when you go around places that you visit on a regular basis and they always have the same radio station on, you see some of the weird radio stations out there. The worst one would have to be the New Hope shop at the dump.
What do they play?
They've got some very strange and unacceptable oldies station on. The music is just awful.
What, is it like Bing Crosby or...?
All that sort of stuff,
wow,
yeah.
Wow, fantastic.
It's really nasty. The people who work there obviously find it delightful, but...
It must be soothing.
It is anything but soothing. I mean, all right, you know, I grew up in the 70s. I like music with screaming guitar solos and lyrics about demons. Yeah. But the oldies station that they play at the New Hope shop, check it out when you're next in there. It is ghastly.
Yeah.
I don't know where they find enough people to listen to such
awful music. We
listen to
the student radio station at work, and they have a daily tradition of at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I don't know if it's to wake you up or to bugger up your mid-afternoon slump. They play some headbanging stuff at 3 in the afternoon.
Quite
every
right.
day.
Yes.
And for the rest, it's okay, but this 3 o'clock's little effort is a bit much for me. They're playing some nice jazz at the moment, which is unusual. Yeah. You don't get many jazz radio stations.
Just as well.
That's a challenge.
Jazz is awful.
When we're off air, put up... What?
Jazz is dreadful.
When we're off air, put on some nice jazz. Put on maybe some... Is there some Brubeck or you got Charlie Parker there? Just whatever.
Could,
see
well,
what you got.
It could well be.
Winston
we'll
Marsalis. Yeah, let's see what you got.
Yeah. There's bound to be something in there, I'm sure.
Well, there's bound to be the Waiheke Festival of Jazz and its various incarnations.
Oh, yeah. There's all sorts of stuff in there. Yeah. All sorts of stuff. Oh, look at that. There we go. I'll put that in for you.
Yeah, it's quite something.
All right.
Yeah,
can we balance five. It with some Black Sabbath then? Can we, huh?
Alan, yeah. You've got a very... Is it a Catholic taste? Do you like Black Sabbath and folk music at the same time?
Yeah.
But not jazz.
Not jazz, no.
Strange.
You know, we can do that, actually.
What?
Balance it with Black Sabbath.
Yes.
Because that's the kind of radio station we are.
There we go. We're a quality outfit.
Yeah. Yes. No, absolutely.
So anyway, so summer. It's going to be a good summer, you reckon?
Oh, yes.
From a brewer's perspective.
Yeah.
What about from
the
local?
No, I think what we are going to see is, again, this wonderful ongoing development of the island from 20 years ago when I first came here, when summer would start and visitors would come over from the mainland and the locals would sort of look at them confused, like, oh, what are all these people doing here? Yeah. What do they want?
Now we're treating them as familiar friends?
Well, no, now the island just seems to be getting better and better each year at going, okay, here we go, summer, roll your sleeves up.
Yeah, they're okay.
Let's work hard. Let's put in the hours. Let's make the tourists happy and basically make sure that when they go home, they've spent all their money.
Now, here's an idea. You heard it here first on Waiheke Radio. You know there's this notion of sister cities and all of that. When you think of the fantastic input to Waiheke we've had over the last few years, the real enrichment to the island by the Argentinian kids who come here. I think they're fantastic.
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah. I went to a concert, a party the other day, and the band was fronted by an Argentinian guy, and he was a real heartthrob. But it's lovely. They just seem to be integrating into the life of Waiheke so well.
Well, I've always found it funny that there was something, I think it was about 12 or so years ago, I was writing some spoof. I forget what it was. Yeah. It was maybe a newspaper column or something like that. And I threw in this reference to Surfdale's vibrant Latin Quarter.
Oh, lovely.
Because it was the most outrageously silly thing I could think of at the time.
But now it's come to pass.
Yeah. Yeah, because Waiheke at the time, it was just so staid and white. And
now we have a
the idea of a vibrant Latin Quarter was so completely incongruous, I thought it was funny. And yet it came to pass.
But my point
I think
is,
it's terrific.
My idea is, I think we should find an island somewhere in Argentina and become, you know, sister islands or a little town in Argentina that's our alter ego on the other side
of
the world.
Well, I think it's going to develop as we go along, because... I was quite surprised to find out what a small number of, I think it's, what are the three countries? There's Chile, Argentina, and Uruguay or something, that we have this...
Yes, it's all to do with a dairy tie-up.
It's a reciprocal deal on visitor visas.
There, yeah. But it came out of dairy investment. We got a dairy investment there, and they responded by saying, give our young people working holiday visas.
Right. Yeah. Well, I was surprised how few visas are issued. Apparently, they're put out online, and youngsters stay up late so they can hit yes.
And then they all come to Waiheke.
Well, this is the thing. I thought there must be thousands and thousands of these Argentinians and Brazilians coming over to New Zealand, and that everywhere was full of them. But no, it turns out it is just Waiheke.
Oh, that's lovely.
It's just that they're also damn good looking, you notice them all.
But Waiheke seems to have become to young South Americans what Earl's Court was to Australians and New Zealanders in the 1970s.
It's a lovely story.
They all sort of congregate here.
Yeah, I think we could really build on this connection. You know, I talked about the guy fronting the local band Radio Rebel.
He's
an Argentinian.
Well,
right?
There's that sort of core of Radio Rebelde, which is Dr. Kevin Appleton and Sean Hyam, who are both British.
Yeah.
But it seems, and then there's a sort of a...
It's a cosmopolitan come and go.
There seem to be a few sort of quite well-established South Americans that play with them. But it seems like every year when the new input come in, it's like, all right, anyone want to sort of come down and try out for it? And so the band sort of changes.
I think you might be onto something there, Alex, because my fear is that if John Mewson and the Our Waiheke campaign win through, our sister city might end up being Wellsford.
That'd be a lot worse. But, you know, so from the perspective of the art gallery, every 2 years we have an artist in residence. And last year we had 11. We invited one Aussie and he brought 9 of his friends, 10 of his friends, so we had 11 of them. But I think for next year it might be quite nice to seek out an Argentinian artist.
Absolutely.
It'd be lovely, yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
those are the kind of things.
Yeah. If the only thing that could really mess this up is if the accommodation continues to sort of spiral downwards in availability whilst the South American population is getting bigger. Yeah. These folks have to have somewhere to stay.
But you talked about the vibrant Latin Quarter. We just have to call it a favela from then on.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but there are real problems.
Yeah, you're right. We're
living on
there.
Beaches over the summer.
Yeah,
we're getting there.
Yeah.
Well,
I think, you know, a few of them come, then they go home and they tell all their friends, and their friends want to come here too. Everybody wants to come to Waiheke, and why the hell not?
Yeah, good.
But there does have to be somewhere for them to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah. I noticed last summer there were people regularly showering at the sports club. It was the deal, you know, obviously.
Maybe we could, next month, we can start to get into that a bit more.
Yes. Maybe look at ways in which the community can sort of look at, welcome this annual influx of these charming young Latin Americans and try and make them...
Well, affordable housing was all the buzz at the last local board election. Remember that?
Yes.
Yeah, well, I don't think they have.
I think that was just one of those things where it's lovely to talk about, but it ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, if you look through the listings in the real estate pages, try and find anything under $500,000 these days.
Yeah.
Well, you could try in Surfdale's lively Latin Quarter.
Well, yes.
Well, before I start, we've got to all learn to speak Spanish.
Fair enough.
Yeah. How do you say goodbye in Spanish?
Adios.
Because I'm preparing to say that.
Yes.
Apparently, though, I had a friend who, some years ago, he was a British friend who, here in New Zealand, and he and his partner were going for a holiday in Chile, and they thought, right, we better learn Spanish. So they went along to Spanish evening classes, and they got really good, and they got to Chile and realized that their teacher was actually from Spain and spoke very pure Spanish, and it was a bit like learning English as a second language and then going to somewhere like, say, Newcastle, or Jamaica, where the accent and the dialogue, the patois are so thick that you can't understand it.
Right,
Chilean Spanish is nothing like the real
thing. So we're going to have to learn Argentinian Spanish.
Yes,
but I think they still say adios, ne?
They do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
but then again, if we've got Brazilians as well, you've got a Portuguese. Sorry, waffling.
That's right. So we've been talking to the opinionated islanders, Alan Knight and Alex Stone. Thank you very much to both of you.
See you next month.
And we're saying adios.
Adios.
And we'll see you on the first Saturday of next month.
You've been listening to the Interviews from Island Life, our weekly look at Waiheke people, events and issues, every Saturday morning from 10 till 12, with interviews repeated on Wednesdays at 7 p.m. and Thursdays at 12:30 p.m. Island Life is brought to you by The Village Butchery, the place to go for great cuts of meat and friendly service. You'll find them at 102 Ocean View Road, Onirua.